Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is a perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll be able to get your show pushed on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms.
And the best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for the episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. It is great to be back for another week. Tons to talk about in MMA and boxing on this show. We're going to recap UFC 261. We're going to talk about Anthony Pettis' debut in the PFL. We're going to recap the weekend in boxing, including Berlanga ending his streak of first-round knockouts, and then preview the Andy Ruiz pay-per-view. You heard me right. Pay-per-view coming up this weekend. So plenty of action there. But Dre, we have to start off. This opening segment, I try to balance it out. We have one fun topic, one sad topic. I'm going to give you the sad topic first. Hip-hop continues to just lose people who are so important to the culture. This time, Shock G passes away. And to me, it seemed out of the blue. And it's one of those things where it's like, damn, man, like another case of we should really give people their flowers while they're here.
Yeah. I saw somebody on social media. First of all, recipe Shock G, Humpty Hump. I was a big Digital Underground fan.
You strike me as a big Digital Underground fan.
Man, I love, man. You know, early on when I was a kid, I was like, yo, I can't, like, Shock G and Humpty Hump, they're the same guy? Like, he was the original, like, dual personality in hip-hop. And when he passed, he was 57, again, young, No information on how he passed away. And it did come out of the blue. And it's strange, man. Death comes in threes. So we lost Black Rob, we lost DMX, we lost Shock G in a month. That should be it, hopefully. Nobody else should die. But I saw, you know, All Hip Hop, my man Chuck Creekmer over at All Hip Hop, they posted about Shock G being a legend. And somebody was like, oh, y'all always, when somebody dies, you just want to, you know, do things. And I get what somebody was trying to say, but let's be honest, man. There's so much going on. There's so much noise in the world. You know, a lot of us that always respected Shock G and Digital Underground, you don't just walk around giving people flowers on like some random day in April. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just, that's not how these things work. But you know what, like if Rakim were to pass tomorrow, let's just say, God forbid, Rakim passes. And yes, obviously he's a legend, but ain't nobody talking about Rakim right now. Because that's just not how the world works. There's a lot of things going on. So I get when people say, you know, give people their flowers now, but it's hard because they ain't nothing, like, it's not like Shock was in the mix at the moment. So with that being said, like, there's a duality to this because I've seen people ask, is Black Rob a legend? And I'm like, no.
Whoa, think, it's like, legendary.
Yeah, I think Black Rob is a very dope rapper. And that's not, and I hate when people do this because it's like, just because I say he's not like a legend, it's like we're really watering down the concept of what a legend is. Just because you die doesn't make you a legend. Yeah. You can be a very dope rapper who had an impact on the industry, but we got to make that legend list very short. Shock G is a legend because Digital Underground changed the game for a lot of people in a time where, especially in the early 90s, where hip hop was very serious. It was taking itself very serious at the time. You had this Shock G, Humpty Hump, Money B. You had that crew come in, same song, Humpty Dance, Do What You Like. It was fun. They were from the Bay. And Shock G was blending, like, as a producer, extraordinarily underrated. Shock G produced one of my favorite songs of all time, which is So Many Tears by Tupac. Also produced I Get Around, which is also one of my favorite songs of all time.
Oh, so good. It's the first song I listened to after his passing.
Yeah, it's like, these are two things that Shock produced. But Shock wasn't at a time where hip hop was like, oh, well, who produced this song? No, it was just what Shock was doing. And he was blending funk with hip hop. Like, my favorite Digital Underground song is Kiss You Back. I love that song. I've always loved that song. it was a song like,
Kiss You Back.
Man, Sex Package. Like, these, the things that Digital Underground did, the things that Shock G produced, and the funk, and everything that he did, like, I was, like, Nothing But Trouble. I saw a clip of that the other day, which is a weird fucking movie, but Shock G's in it. Like, he gave so much of the game, but was so understated as both an MC and a producer, that kids today really don't know who Shock G is, but they've heard I Get Around. They've heard So Many Tears. Like, I'm a Murs fan. I loved Risky Business off the End of the Beginning album.
Yeah.
Shock has always been around, and that man has changed the game. So there's no question to me that he's lit. I mean, come on, man. The Humpty Dance? Who wasn't doing the Humpty Dance?
People still do the Humpty Dance. To this day, people get on the dance floor and do the Humpty Dance.
Getting busy in a Burger King bathroom? Like, that is still a legendary lyric. Just like, you know, Girl with Lemonade. Like, Humpty and Burger King bathrooms, it's the same thing, man. It's that man is a legend, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we don't know what happened to Shock. It sucks for his family. I know people that were friends with Shock, and they're all torn up about it. But nobody's really talking, and sometimes it's better that way. You know, MF Doom passed, and he passed in like October, and nobody knew until the new year.
Yep.
Which is kind of, you know, If something happens to me, unfortunately, I have this podcast, so I guess you guys will figure it out sooner or later if I don't show up for a month. But I prefer it that way. I don't want people all up in my business. If something was going on with Shock, I'm glad that it happened in privacy where people couldn't start speculating and rumors and all this shit. Like, when you want to be out the scene, you want to be out the scene. It's crazy, though, because when you looked at Shock, he always looked so young and youthful. Granted, yeah, you know, he had gray hair, but my man looked young. That black didn't crack.
It's purposely gray, kind of.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. Shock, it's rest in peace, Shock D. The man was a legend. It's unfortunate that, you know, we lost a third person in hip hop in less than 30 days, but I, you know, I hope it's over. It's just, it's also scary because black men dying under 60, it's like, man, take care of yourselves. You know, take care of yourselves, man. I don't know what's happening. I mean, obviously DMX lived a hard life. Black Rob, he lived a hard life, had kidney issues, had four strokes. Don't know what happened to Shock G, but you know, it makes me want to, you know, check my health. Like I'm going to go to the doctor and make sure everything is good. Cause that shit was scary.
Word. I mean, shout out to my last doctor's visit. Everything's good with me, but like you never know. You never know. And then these people are gone and it's just like, damn, like, yo, that the lasting impact. My dad called me when he found out the news. He was like, yo, our boy died. I was like, yeah, Shock G. Like me and my dad are like, my dad tells the story all the time because he's a weirdo. But when I was like 1 or 2 years old, I was one of the kids who like never liked having their pamper on. So I was just like habitually nude, right? Like from not all the way, but I would Donald Duck it all the time. So I'm just running around, just company over, whatever. Like my pamper would be off. I'm just running around, bare ass. So my dad would always like laugh. And he'd be like, grab him in the biscuits. And he'd be like, like make me run, like fake pinching my butt when I was like 1 or 2 years old. So he was like, yo, that's Shock G. He's like, yo, this one boy. He's like, I always loved that line from Shock G. And I used to chase you around, tease you with that. And I was like, a running joke forever. And then now he's like, yo, Shock G is gone. And I was like, yeah, it's crazy that like we have this little inside joke for now 32 years, about to be 33. My birthday's coming up. And Shock G has no clue. But like that little line, that impact is something that bonds us as father and son. And it's like, yo, you don't know how you impact someone's life. The smallest of things to the grand catalog that he has. So it was crazy to hear. I was like, man, Shock G is gone. So yeah, hopefully, you know, this is the last and not just another in a line and a trend. Hopefully we kind of ease up, let our legends stick around a little more. Like let's calm down, push it off. And yeah, that's my hope going forward for the next couple of months.
Oh, I got to say something because I can feel our listeners breathing down our neck. Because I didn't mention this, but yes, obvious. Yes, there would be no Tupac if it wasn't for Shock G.
Oh, right? Of course.
There's somebody listening right now that's going, you didn't mention Tupac. Yes, you're absolutely right. If there was no Same Song, if there was no Digital Underground Sex Package Tour, if there was no Humpty Dance, there would be no Tupac. If it wasn't for Shock G and Money B putting Tupac on, not just Same Song. Go back and watch the old tour footage when Tupac's out there dancing with these gigantic overalls on, looking crazy. He's got the Gumby. Yes, that man brought y'all a legend. A legend. Because Tupac is absolutely a legend. If it wasn't for Shock, Pac, we probably wouldn't know who Pac was.
Those are always the craziest stories, right? Like, and Tupac passed, so there's like all this on record footage of Shock talking about Tupac and him knowing how he had it and the greatness of Tupac way before anyone. Like he gave him these spots, gave him the spot on, you know, on the song when Pac really hadn't proved anything till that day. So it's amazing to hear that story. But there's other guys, like I always think of, like, we never necessarily got the Jay-Z story from Jazzo.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they kind of beefed and then Jazzo really just doesn't talk about that shit. Like, these guys who find legends and the legends are under their wing and then the legends grow and grow past that level. So it's always intriguing to me. So Shock, you know, he had that eye for talent and he just knew what was cool. Like, no one would think to pull off a fake pair of glasses and a giant nose. Like, no one thinks like, yo, yeah, this is going to make me a star. But he didn't. He was just cool. He knew what was cool.
Man's had an alter ego in hip hop, man. Before there was Doom.
That's pro wrestling shit.
Yeah. Before there was Doom and Victor Vaughn and KMD, before like NYOL, you know, he was, you know, also part of, you know, old KMD Click. But before all that, there was Shock G and Humpty Hump. And there was a time, and I guarantee anybody, there was a time that you were like, are they the same person? Because they had a different cadence. the Humpty glasses, and you know, it wasn't no social media. So at the time, I was one of those kids. I was like, yo, are you sure? Is they're two different people for real? And then, you know, eventually I figured it out, but I felt like an idiot. I was like, oh my God, it's the same guy. But I thought it was incredible. A rapper with an alter ego, Humpty Hump. Like, come on, man. That shit is incredible.
Kayfabe is real, baby. Kayfabe is real. So, yeah, you know, peace to Shot G's family. Everyone remaining grieving, you know, nothing but the best of wishes towards them. And I figured we saved the good, happy, uplifting part of this segment for now. And just wanted to nerd out real quick because two things that have been on my mind. One, I watched the Mortal Kombat movie. You probably haven't seen it yet. We don't got to talk about the movie itself, but I watched it. And two, we recently had Mega Ran on Wrestling with Stereotypes, which everyone can see, I believe, starting probably when this is out. So Monday, same day as the podcast, you guys can watch Wrestling with Stereotypes on adfreeshows.com. We have Mega Ran, and we talked a bunch of cool video game and rap and nerd shit. So it had my mind on that level. And watching the new Mortal Kombat, which you'll get around to it. You're a tough critic, whatever. But it has pretty decent reviews by people who watched it based on expectations. But it made me think, Dre, you're a nerd. You're a video game nerd from way back in the day. Which video games need movies?
All right. First of all, I started watching Mortal Kombat last night after UFC, but I tapped out.
Okay.
I was tired. I was like, yo, I watched about an hour of it. And I was like, it's all right. All the reviews I've seen have either been people really love it or really hate it. So I'm going to finish it. I know what I'm getting into because I'm a video game nerd. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch this. But when it comes to video game movies, this is a really tough thing because for the most part, Hollywood fucks up the video game movie.
Correct. But for a long time, they fucked up the superhero movies too. So
yes. So eventually you feel like they'll get it right. Now, obviously a game like Last of Us is going to have a series, so I can't mention that. But the one video game that I've always sat there and was like, this should be a movie, was Metal Gear Solid. I've always wanted, because listen, Solid Snake, like I played all the Metal Gears. I played them for years.
Where you had to hide under the box and creep around.
Love it. Oh, man. Love Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2, Solid Snake, Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, which has arguably, not even arguably, it is the best boss battle of all time. When Snake faces the boss in Metal Gear Solid 3, and I played a lot of video games. It is the best boss battle in any video game I've ever played in my life.
No, Final Fantasy had some fucking wild boss battles.
Listen, Sephiroth was great. But I'm telling you, the boss, when you face boss, like, first of all, the emotion of it, the song, the Snake Eater song that's playing, and the fact that you literally have to use everything at your disposal to beat your mentor is incredible. Like, it's just incredible. Like, I don't care. People are going to argue me. Somebody's going to bring up Psycho Mantis from Metal Gear Solid 1, which is fair, because I remember spending all this time trying to figure out how to beat Psycho Mantis, and then you had to pull the controller out and put it in port 2 so you couldn't read your mind. It's also one of the greatest.
What?
You never played Metal Gear Solid 1?
I don't think I finished it. I wasn't like a person that played video games all the way through back then. Like,
listen.
I don't know. Zelda Ocarina of Time has probably the best final boss battle I've played. But I made it all the way to that.
It's boss. But in Metal Gear Solid 1, you face Psycho Mantis. And when you face Psycho Mantis, he's telling you that he reads your mind and you can't beat him. Everything that and so you're trying to fight him, you try to pull out your gun, he moves. Everything he does, he's got a move for. Yeah. But if you go to your codex, he starts telling you what's on your memory card in your PlayStation. He's like, oh, I see you've been playing, and he'll like pick a game that's on your memory card. You know, Kojima for Konami was incredible at making games. Yeah. So you go to the codex, and Psycho Mantis would hack your codex and he would tell you what's on your memory card. So if you keep playing and you get pissed off after all, because it's like 20 minutes, because Metal Gear Solid also has these extraordinarily epic boss battles that take a very long time to complete. But this one in particular, you can't hit him and you have to avoid getting hit. He's reading your mind. He's talking shit to you. And then about 30 minutes into it, I can't remember how I figured this out. It kept mentioning like what I was doing on my controller. And I remember I was like, you know what? I unplugged my controller and put it in the controller 2 port. And he was like, what are you doing? And that's how you beat Psycho Mantis. It is also one of the greatest boss battles I've ever had in a video game. If you have never played Metal Gear Solid 1, find a way to play this game because it is incredible. That being said, this game needs a movie because the story is ridiculous, right? From all the Metal Gear stories, like World War and all this stuff and espionage, but it just lends itself to great drama. And it's Kojima. If you get Kojima on a game, come on, man. It's going to be incredible. So Metal Gear Solid should absolutely be a game. I wanted, like, Final Fantasy had a movie and it sucked.
Yeah.
I didn't really like it. The Spirits Within, yeah. I was disappointed. So I'm not necessarily sure, like, a live action Final Fantasy VII movie would work for me, even though Final Fantasy VII is, like, the best of them all. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to see that.
See, I like the Prince of Persia movie more than most people, but I was a Prince of Persia nerd. Like, it could have been better. Like, at the time, could have been way better. But that's still one that was like, okay, it was good enough. To me, fighting games make for amazing movies. So, I mean, I would love a Tekken movie.
Oh, no, thank you. I think fighting games make the worst movies. The Street Fighter movie sucked.
It did, but that could have been good, too. I like the original Mortal Kombat movies, even better than this new one.
I just liked it because of the fan service, but other than that, they're really shitty movies. Like, to me, they've been really shitty movies. I want to see a great story. And unfortunately, like, The Last of Us is, like, the story to make. But fighting games? No. I don't want to see, like, imagine a virtual fighting game movie.
No, Virtual Fighter was wild. There was no rhyme or reason to that. Tekken actually showed up and had, like, a super strong storyline, like, right when you kick the game off. And the characters are so fucking dope. Like, I loved Tekken's characters. That's what, I mean.
See, I like a Ninja Gaiden movie, right? Because I like fucking karate flicks.
No, and Tenchu was my shit, by the way. It could be a Tenchu movie. Tenchu. I need another Tenchu game.
You have to figure out, like, who are the best characters to make movies around? I guess that's the real question, because
they fucked up Super Mario Brothers. Like, how do you fuck up Super Mario Brothers? Like, if we're doing redos, I could take a redo of Super Mario Brothers now that we have better CGI and stuff.
Yeah, I still think it'll suck, because it's hard to figure out a plot line to these things, man. It's like, playing a video game is one thing because you have all this time invested and ultimately you're just trying to get to the end of the game. But when you try to make it a story that makes sense, that's when you're just like, this ain't it, Chief. This story is dumb. The Super Mario Brothers movie was terrible.
It wasn't good. I'll take a Zelda. No, fuck it. Yeah, give me a Zelda movie. Zelda has great storylines. And that's pretty easy to transfer over, like having someone as Link and then you're trying to say Princess Zelda. Like, it's pretty, you know, straightforward and laid out for you in the games.
Yeah, I just don't know if it translates. I mean, it could be a dope movie. It has to be done right. Because, like, they're making a Borderlands movie, and I love the Borderlands game. Oh, Bioshock, which is also one of my favorite games. Bioshock
was good, yeah.
Yeah, I just rebought it for Switch, and I'm going to play it again. Don't ask me why. It's just, I play games over again for really no reason. But I think a Bioshock game would be dope. It couldn't really follow the beats of the original or any of the two sequels, but I think a Bioshock game would be.
You're really big into, like, story games, though. Like, that's your wave.
I really get invested in a good narrative in a video game. Like, I was raised by, like, TV, so I like to sink myself in the video game. So if it's a great immersive narrative, I'm all in. I play sports games, of course, but, yo, I'm all in. You got to have a dope story. And in some games, I just got to see through to the end. Like Assassin's Creed, that Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I know I sank like 80 hours in that fucking dumbass game for the game to end the way that it did. Yo, I'm salty.
The gameplay throughout was pretty good. Resident Evil has a decent track record with movies.
Nah.
Silent Hill, I wasn't into.
Silent Hill, that's another one. It's hard, man. Like, Red Dead Redemption could probably be a dope video game.
Oh, that'd be an incredible movie.
Yeah, a video game movie. Yeah, like, they might be able to do that one right. But it's a roll of the dice, man. It's really difficult. The only one I'll stand by is Metal Gear Solid, because that could be a whole ass fucking James Bond espionage series, like in the weapons and everything else, like it, that would be, that's the one that I would pick. Everything else is, it's all risky.
No, that's true. That's tough. I think it's been done well. Before we go to break, then, what's your best video game to movie transition? Since you're, because so far we've heard nothing but what has been pretty bad.
That, man, what's yours? Another one I was gonna say, but it has a series now, is The Witcher. Is Witcher's an amazing video game, but it has a series on Netflix.
Yeah, and I'm not going with a series because a series kind of cheats it out. I really, and it's cheesy, and I understand that it's not like a great movie, right? Like, I can admit this, but it's a movie that I watch constantly, like at least once every 2 years. And the first Mortal Kombat movie that came out, I love that. With Johnny Cage doing the split, hitting Goro in the nuts, and like Goro was way better in that one. He was like beastly, and everything just looked great. Liu Kang was a badass in those movies. I love Liu Kang as the main character, as it should be. You can't just come around inventing characters to put into this. Like, oh, that's ridiculous. But Liu Kang was dope. Sonya Blade was dope in that one. The second one was okay, but nah, the first one was so dope. Kano was ominous and in and out of the boat. You had the scene where Scorpion's in the forest, just get over here, and is going through the trees and like winding. Yo, him and Johnny Cage fight, that was in the forest. That shit was crazy. Shang Tsung actually taking people's souls, and like Shang Tsung was scary. Like, your soul is mine. Like, that's, come on. Like, to me, that's it. That's number one, and we can talk after that. But the first Mortal Kombat is the one I rock with. Second, which goes under radar, is probably the original Tomb Raider, Lara Croft. Not the sequels, but seeing Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft, I was like, oh, this is it. I was like, oh, perfect.
Yeah, perfect. See, man, movie video games suck.
You didn't like Tomb Raider?
Nah, not really, man. Like, I didn't like Tomb Raider. Obviously, I didn't like Super Mario Brothers. I didn't like Doom. I didn't watch Rampage. I thought it was crazy.
Oh, I didn't watch that shit. Yeah.
Like, I loved the video game as a kid because I just like to eat the people. I thought it was incredible. But to make a movie out of it, I was like, what are you doing?
I think Cena is doing Duke Nukem now.
See, Max Payne wasn't bad with Mark Wahlberg. That wasn't bad.
Did it have bullet time? I didn't even watch it.
Yeah, but it wasn't good. It wasn't bad. So my favorite video game movie of all time wasn't ever a video game. So this is kind of a cheat. And it's The Wizard with Fred Savage that introduced Super Mario 3 like a year and a half before it came out. The whole movie was about Fred Savage like trying to get in this video game tournament, and they previewed Super Mario Brothers 3 in the video game a whole year and a half before the goddamn video game came out. So imagine being a kid and you go to the movie theater to see The Wizard. And
I remember the ad on VHS.
And you're watching this thing, and they do this tournament. And at the end, they're like, oh, this new Mario game. Now, obviously, Mario was king. Nintendo was king back in the day because there was nothing else. And you see this movie with Mario in a fucking tanuki suit, which we didn't know what it was at the time. But you're a kid, and you see Mario flying. I'm marked out in the movie theater. Like, I lost my shit. And I used to get Nintendo Power. This is, like, really telling of how into this shit I was. They just get my Nintendo Power. That was on the cover. They were like, Super Mario 3 coming out next year. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I just saw this movie. And also, you have to remember, when movies came out in the theater, it took them like a year to hit the video store. It's not like today. Like, a movie hits the theater and it's immediately like on demand, like maybe even 6 weeks. Back then, you had to wait a whole ass year. So I saw it in the theater and I was hyped, and I had to wait almost a year for it to come out on VHS to rent it at Blockbuster. And then even still, I had to wait even longer for the game to come out. It was excruciating. That was a cheat. That's a
cheat answer. If that was the case, Wreck-It Ralph would have been my number one. Wreck-It Ralph is so dope for a video. Yo, Zangief in Wreck-It Ralph, when they go to the Bad Guys Anonymous meeting. That shit is so funny. It's like, who would crush good guy's head like sparrow egg? Like, it's Keith. This fucking, yo, he had me in tears. Oh man, but yeah, Wreck-It Ralph is number one if we're cheating. So yeah, well, you threw.
If we're really cheating, the best video game movie ever is not a video game, but it is a video game now that I own on my Switch. It's Scott Pilgrim versus the World. But that's completely cheating.
Yeah, that's a comic book first. Yeah, that's
but completely. That is one movie that I will never not watch if it's on TV.
No, the movie is incredible. Incredible.
That's a cheat. It's not based on the video.
Cheated around the question. Let's hit the break so we can come back and talk combat sports. First up, UFC and PFL. So don't go anywhere. Tons of MMA on the other side of this break.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Roadshow. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just that quick, we are back, and it's time to talk about MMA. First up, before we get into UFC 261 and recap that card, Anthony Pettis made his PFL debut, and they messed up because they booked him in the first round. I guess it's not the tournament yet, right? Because everyone has fights throughout the summer. But they messed up and paired him with Clay Collar. The matchmakers must not be boxing fans. Because upsets are what Clay Collar does. That's all he did with ESPN over the summer. So he went in there, and Anthony Pettis thought it was sweet to strike with Clay Collar. And Clay put the paws on him, dropped him twice, shot to the body, to the head. Dre, is Anthony Pettis washed?
Yes, he was washed when, I mean, listen.
No, he just knocked out Wonderboy 2 years ago.
2 years ago. That's a long time, man.
Yeah, that was a fluke. I mean, he was getting beat around before he hit that Superman punch.
It's kind of a wrap on Anthony Pettis' MMA career. He's
collared. My boy, Clay. Hey,
and it's crazy because once upon a time, Anthony Pettis was on a Wheaties box, and Clay Collar was looking for a promotion that would let him fight.
Yep.
Because Clay Collar was in the UFC for a hot second, didn't make really any noise. It just shows you how quickly things change, and they paired them in PFL, which is smart because it got people to watch. The production was great. I thought it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, pretty good.
But Collar gets the win. And, yeah, Dana White sitting there going, ha, ha, ha. Because this is what he does. He, you know, we talk about Dana all the time, and it's usually not nice. And but the one thing he does very well is he knows kind of when to get rid of guys.
Like, yeah, he knows he's like the Patriots. He'll get rid of you early. Instead of hanging on to you too late.
He knows when it's time. And it was time for Pettis. You know, it seems like Tyron Woodley's gone as well. I did my rankings today, and I was like, hey, he's not in my rankings anymore. So he's out of here.
Oh, damn.
No formal announcement. Like, nobody noticed it. Like, I think somebody mentioned it on social media. And being part of the rankings committee, I had a chance. I was doing my rankings after last night's card. And I went to welterweight and I noticed the spot was missing. And I had to see who it was. I was like, who's missing? And I looked and it was Tyron Woodley, who's been removed from the rankings. And if he's removed from the rankings, clearly he's been cut by the organization.
Wow.
So Woodley's gone. And you go down the list. You know, sometimes it kind of backfires. Ryan Bader's been pretty damn good in Bellator. But for the most part, like Benson Henderson, you know, you go down the list of guys, they are not the same. And Pettis, he showed up. PFL used him smart as a name. They're like, oh, we got a name, former champion. I mean, think about this. Once upon a time, the super fight to make was Anthony Pettis versus Jose Aldo.
Yep.
And never happened. Nope. Never no more. Got ran over by RDA. Was never the same again. So he got beat up by Clay Collard. And good for Clay. That momentum helps. And especially helps for his return back to boxing, whenever that is. Good for him. Pettis, we'll see. I don't think he's like completely done. He's not totally washed. He'll win some fights still, but he'll never be the Anthony Pettis with the Showtime kick. That was like a decade ago, which is crazy.
It is, but I mean, the guy's still only like 30.
Hey, man.
Like, he hit the wall early. But I mean, a lot of mileage on Anthony Pettis. But that brings us to UFC 261. We won't start in the main event. We'll work our way up the main card. Let me make sure nothing in the prelims that I really have to talk about. No, I mean, Alex Oliveira lost.
There's really nothing to talk about but the fact that we had fans at the ViStar Memorial Arena. And that crowd was hot. And listen, I'm gonna preface it with this. It was unnerving to see how many people were not wearing masks. Like, to see all those people and just like, yeah, like yelling at each other. I was like, yo, this is crazy. I'd never be a part of this.
Tom Brady in there.
Yeah. But I will say, that crowd was electric. And that is kind of dope to see fans with the energy. I just would never be part of any of that shit. Like, I'm resigned to the notion that I'm cool on all of this. And if that's what they want to do in Florida, cool. When they come to Vegas, it's going to be a different story. Because I'm be very – I don't think I'm covering the McGregor-Poirier card.
I'm – full disclosure, I just booked a vacation for that week. I guess we'll talk about this later. I didn't even put it on rundown. But Ryan Garcia withdrew from his fight that week.
Yeah.
And it opened up a pocket in my summer schedule. And I was like, oh, I'm out. I'm going to Cancun. So, no, I won't be covering the Conor McGregor fight, at least not from the States. I might be covering it poolside from Cancun.
Yeah, I mean, that for me, I've gotten so used to watching fights from home, and I'm kind of comfortable here. So the idea of being in an arena with, you know, T-Mobile holds, what almost 20,000 people
yep.
that don't have to wear a mask, yelling and screaming and carrying on, and the idea that I'd be part of media, and I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I don't think I'm ready for that, even if I'm vaccinated. I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah.
So watching
my first fight with fans will be at the Virgin Hotel, it looks like. So it's not like an abundance of fans. It's a smaller arena. And I'm still gonna be masked up. Vaccinated and all. I'm fully vaccinated. I don't even care.
Yeah. So the only thing on the prelims that I remember, I was like, man, this crowd is live. Like, these people are on fire. And then at the same time, I'm looking at the crowd and I was like, yeah, they don't look like me. So I'm like, yo, because I tweeted it and I was like, yo, this is kind of unnerving. And it's crazy because, you know, I cover boxing, MMA, pro wrestling. You know, I do politics on Twitter and talk all that shit. MMA is the one thing that I tweet about that these hardcore UFC Dana White MAGA fans, they seek me out. They flood my mentions. They're like, turn the TV off then. You fucking cupcake. And I'm like, yo, like,
aren't you a cupcake?
Man, I get called all kinds of shit. And I was just like, yo, I'm not gonna be there. Like, I'm still, you don't have to watch the fight. I never said I wasn't gonna watch the fight. I'm just saying that it's weird that it just feels strange to see all these people with no masks. It's still a pandemic, like, people still getting sick. Maybe it's not killing everybody, right? Like, that's not happening. Everybody's not dying. Some people are, though.
Yep.
I prefer, like, and I've said this from the moment the pandemic started. I don't want to get sick. The idea of getting very sick is not fun to me. So it's like, if I can avoid it and I know that there's something out there that's making people very sick, I'm cool. I'm very cool on that. And your man Dana was like, yo, the media made COVID. No, the media didn't. The media didn't make COVID.
Did he say COVID. That?
Yeah, he blamed the media. He's like, the media was crazy about COVID. That's why the UFC had to take all these precautions. Now, there's two things here. One, no, it's not the media. It's COVID was real. But two, MMA media was only on Dana's head that first month and a half when Dana was persistent in trying to make sure the Khabib Ferguson fight happened in April when nobody knew what was going on with this pandemic. Yep. He was trying to make that shit happen. He tried to take it to fucking Tai Chi Palace. He was determined to do it. And that's when the media was on his head. I was like, dude, you don't even know what the hell this pandemic is. It wasn't even called a pandemic. It was a virus that was killing people. And he was like, ah, I'm good. I'm just going to make. That's when the media was like, nah, man. After that, the apex, media wasn't on them like that. They were like, all right, cool. That's what you want to do. Yep. You know, if you're putting people in a bubble and you're doing taking all these precautions, there's no fans here, fine. Media really didn't give them shit after that. But it was that first month and a half where Dana was like, Khabib and Tony is going to happen. And everybody was like, no, it's not. And Disney, your employer, was like, listen, fool, shut it down. Yeah. Cut it out. That's fair. That media wasn't crazy. Disney was crazy. Disney told you to cut that shit out.
We had some common sense. They're like, yo, if we got to close down Disney World, you got to shut down shop for a second. Like, listen, you ain't bigger than Disney World, my man.
Dan is crazy with that. So that's the one thing, like watching the prelims were decent. There was a lot of energy in the crowd. And I was like, it's kind of cool to see fans here. I just know I can't be part of this.
No, and listen, they may not look like you and I from, you know, just close up the eye test, but they were young and demographic. And, you know, that's made me feel, I guess, if I could feel a little bit better about it, is like, listen, if a bunch of young people want to go out there and risk their life, like, you do whatever you want if you're young. If you get sick, that's on you. It was my biggest problem from the start was you're passing this to people who cannot physically take care of themselves or help themselves.
Right.
You're passing it to the elderly, to the people who are sick, to the cancer stricken, to, you know, people just trying to go pick up their groceries with their children. And a mother of five is now immunocompromised and got a quarantine from their kids for 2 weeks and can't go to work. And like, you're fucking up lives that are not yours because you just don't care because you're allegedly young and healthy. Even though now we've seen, like, with Kamayev, he's like he threw up blood and stuff. Who knows if his lungs will ever be the same? I don't want to do that either. But if you're worth risking that, cool. So now that vaccinations have rolled out, not that that's the end all be all, but vaccinations have rolled out, the elderly, the sick, all of them were first. Now, if the young people don't want to get vaccinated, at this point, even if you're an elderly person, you don't want to get vaccinated, you think it's a microchip or, you know, they're implanting you. Listen, you've had the chance for 3 months. God bless. Take whatever risk you want. All of my grandparents are vaccinated. My entire household is, down to my stepdaughter who's 18. Like, I am not playing games. So all my people vaccinated, I'm trying to keep them alive. Vaya con Dios. Like, do whatever you got to do, yo. So 15,000 in there. I hope all 15,000 are with us a month from now. That's all I can say. And if not, you know, they knew the risk. Group chat inside joke, you know the rates. if you're ready to risk it, then it is what it is. Let's talk about the card itself then, because the energy in the building definitely picked up for the main card. And we had coming out Anthony Smith, Jimmy Crute fighting, which I thought was a good matchup. It was a good first round, but unfortunately it ends due to injury. Crute cannot continue. Jimmy Smith picks up the TKO victory. I kind of want to see them run this back sometime in the future.
Yeah. Crute's leg was shot. One leg kick. Like, he was the one laying leg kick. Smith was using the jab. Crute eats one leg kick. His leg just dies on him. Just completely, like, just said, fuck it. His leg was, I'm cool. I'm out. I'd like to see him run it back, too. I don't think we learned a lot. I feel like it was shaping up to be a really good fight. The leg kicks versus jabs. Crute is very good. And it's just crazy. One leg kick. A single leg. The first leg kick Anthony Smith landed did that damage to his leg. And you wonder, they haven't mentioned anything else about it, but how bad is it? It's not, you know, he was like, it's just a nerve. I don't know, man. You get kicked in the leg like that and your leg just dies on you. I don't know if it's just like a little nerve thing that just comes back. You know, that could be a little bit more of a serious injury. But either way, it set the tone for a night where no fight made it past the midpoint of the second round.
Wow, none of them?
No, this was, like, I tweeted it. The card, the entire length of the cage time on the card was 19 minutes and 56 seconds total on the main card.
That's a fun night.
in the Zuffa era, it's the shortest MMA UFC pay-per-view of all time, in the Zuffa era. In prior to, like, the dark era, I think 32 had a shorter card. I think UFC 32 was like 17 minutes. And then before that, the all heavyweight card, I think it was UFC 146, ended up being 26 minutes. But this had in the five round title fight era, this is absolutely the shortest pay-per-view card, because this entire card had a cage time that was shorter than one title fight.
Yo, that's so wild. 56
seconds. 19 minutes and 56 seconds of cage action. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of them ended in a lot more spectacular fashion than with this opening match. But yeah, I want to see that run back. The second fight, Uriah Hall versus Chris Weidman. Another one hard to watch, right? This is a matchup, and we talked about this, you know, we talked about this coming into the fight last week. Where it was like, yo, this is a fight that could have happened 10 years ago. These are two guys when Chris Weidman beat Anderson Silva. We're like, yo, these guys are the future. And then Uriah Hall was supposed to be that guy. And then it was like, yo, they just never met. And then we're finally getting this fight. They've actually fought once, I think, before they got to UFC in New Jersey.
Yeah, it was Hall's first loss.
Yep. So it's like, okay, cool. Like, we are getting somewhere. Like, this is a matchup MMA fans have wanted to see. And then it's weird because, like, deja vu all over again, or Groundhog's Day. Like, this time Chris Weidman throws a kick and his whole leg snaps. And it's exactly the same placement of Anderson Silva's when he did it to Chris Weidman. And it's scary to see this happen to the guy when he was 8 years ago looking across at one of the greatest fighters of all time, watching him go through it. Crazy.
I mean, MMA guys, like, what the fuck? Like, this, you're ruthless, MMA gods. Why would you do this to him? Like, Chris Weidman, you're right. He checked Anderson Silva's leg kick. Were you there for that? Were you in the building?
I was in the building. I cringed.
Yeah, it sounded like a shotgun, the way that thing snapped. And I remember watching it and just being, like, disgusted. And then, you know, they showed the replay, like, four times. Like, what are you doing? Like, stop showing the replay. I don't need to see this.
Oh, no. Dana tweeted it out. I was like, come on, man.
So, yeah. So, but in this fight, the first kick that Weidman throws breaks his leg. And everybody's seen it by now. And, you know, it's, again, his career could be over. Anderson Silva obviously came back. He actually won a couple fights.
Yep.
But Chris Weidman, he's 36, former champion. It was like, you know, I tweeted in tongue-in-cheek, is like, win or go to Bellator. That's the kind of fight this was. And, you know, you break your leg on the first kick, and then, he tried to step on it. Oof. I mean, this was tough to watch. But my big thing is what you just mentioned. Dana White tweets, Uriah Hall, first fighter to win a fight without landing a strike. Excuse me? Is that what we're doing right now? Is that what's important? Like, we just watched a man's leg snap like spaghetti, like dry spaghetti, just snap. The only thing that kept it together was the flesh around the shin bone. Otherwise, this thing would have been in, like, the first row or would have hit the cage.
Yeah.
And the first thing that you can think of to tweet is that Uriah Hall just won a fight without landing a strike? Nah, man, you got to be a little bit more sensitive than that. But it's Dana White. Like, what do we expect, right? Like, what the man called the Las Vegas Review Journal a piece of shit because basically wrote Adam Hill.
Shout out to my guy, Adam Hill.
Yeah. Adam basically wrote a story that kind of outlined what's on the back of the tickets that says, basically, if you go to a fight, you have an opportunity to contract COVID, and we're not responsible for you dying. And that's what the article was about. But Dana didn't like that. Said, fuck the Review Journal. They're a piece of shit. Blah, blah, blah. So I can't expect somebody who does that and underpays their fighters and all this other bullshit to care about your former champion snapping his leg in a career-threatening injury. It was in bad taste. Uriah Hall handled it like a champ. And in a strange way, I wondered when this happened, because we all know that Uriah Hall, his deficiencies in the octagon are not physical. They've always been mental. He couldn't pull the trigger. Whatever it was, we've always looked at Uriah Hall, I was like, what's wrong with him? And I didn't know, like, you face an opponent that you haven't seen in over a decade, and you know it's kind of like do or die. And he's a former champion, and he breaks his leg fighting you. I was wondering how that was going to affect Uriah Hall. And he handled it like a champ. I don't know what he's like at home right now. I have no idea. Man, that's just, you don't want to see that happen to anybody. And that's a horrible injury.
Yeah, man, it was ugly. It was, on the Anderson Silva one, I remember him shrieking in the ring.
Yeah.
And that was, because, you know, from our distance and being on the floor trying to look into the cage, you don't get that really good angle anyway. Like, you could tell he's, like, down there holding his leg. But, like, his shrieks, like, two or three of them, I was like, God, that's just, it sounds horrible. So, like, Weidman, man, I could imagine being in a building. I mean, some people were in the building for both. So, nah, it's just, yeah, man, it's something that's very hard to watch. So, speedy recovery to him, 17 seconds into that fight. Wow. And then we get to the three title fights. First up, Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Andrade. I mean, no one's beating Bullet. No one. If it's at 135, I'm not sure if Amanda's beating. Like, that's, you're splitting hairs. And that's the best compliment I could give Shevchenko. Because I thought Shevchenko won the first fight, the three-round fight, and Amanda won the five. So, damn, she's just too good everywhere. Jessica Andrade thought she could bully her, put her against the cage, toss her around, take her to the ground. And every time Shevchenko reversed it, it was like, what? Get out of here, little girl. Bang, and just slammed her. And I was like, you shouldn't be this skilled and then that strong. No one in that division has an answer for her. No one.
This was, this level of domination, seven takedowns in two rounds. I don't know if Andrade really even lands a strike. And Shevchenko's big at flyweight because, you know, she was small as a bantamweight. And Andrade was big as a strawweight and kind of smaller. She's more regular size as a flyweight. But you look at these two in the cage, you just look at skill and the way that Shevchenko closed the distance and the way that Shevchenko carved her up with strikes. There was a moment where she took her down, got up, threw a head kick, and Andrade pulled back, and she fired a three-punch combo and then scored another takedown towards the end of the first round. I was like, yo, ain't nobody beating this woman. Nobody. You're not. She's if there was an MMA version of the Avengers, she would be Black Widow. We get Scarlett Johansson the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Because the way that she fights, the way that she moves, I mean, obviously the dancing at the end of every fight, the way that she decides, like, the way she talks her shit, right? Like, she's everything the Black Widow is in the Avengers in a cage.
Yep.
She went in there and beat Andrade at her own game and embarrassed her. And then after the fight was like, you bitches think I got a weakness? Like, you can try me if you want to. And the sweetest thing about it all was, like, Joe Rogan says, you know, so anybody can come get some, right? And she's like, what? Like, she's like, I don't. You know, English is my first language. I speak like four of them, but what are you talking about? But she goes, oh, y'all can come get some. Because dead ass, ain't nobody.
She cut half the promo in Spanish.
Yeah, ain't nobody beat.
She's incredible.
Bullet is not being beat by any woman in the flyweight division. It's just not happening. You look at the makeup of that division, what she's done to just about everybody else already. Jessica I mean, you know, Jennifer Maya, who she kind of toyed with, Andrade, you know, Joanna Tribe. Like, there's nobody that's beaten this woman. She's that good. She is, if pound for pound lists included men and women, she's easily top five. You know, a lot of people think Amanda Nunes is the best fighter on the planet, regardless of gender. Shevchenko's not too far behind that because she's embarrassing people at this point. And Andrade is a former champion. Let's not forget, she slammed Rose Namajunas to hell.
Yep.
You know, and lost a split decision, moved up, killed Caitlin Chukagian's ribs, earned her spot, and everybody was like, yeah, she can give Shevchenko a hard time. She was like, no, she can't. What the fuck y'all talking about?
Not even close.
And dragged her, crucifixed her, and pummeled her. And at the end, like, Andrade was like, I couldn't do nothing with her. I had nothing for her. She's that good. That is one woman. I don't know what you do with her.
Let her run through everyone. Don't.
She's too small for bantamweight. And that's the only reason why she lost to Amanda Nunes. She was just too small.
Yep.
Skill-wise, she's the best in the world. But that's what pound for pound means. Like, she could beat any other bantamweight. Like, if Nunes decides to retire, Shevchenko would be a two-division champion. Easy. Yeah.
She'd be a three if you wanted. Like, and she'd be very small at 145, and I'm taking her to win.
She don't care. It's like, she beat the shit out of Jermaine Durandamy. Like, she is that damn good. And it's frightening now that Dana has to figure out who to put in the octagon with her next, that makes us think maybe they could beat her. Because even with Amanda, right? Amanda Nunes has fought people like Cyborg, and we're like, man, it's going to be a hell of a fight. And then she beats them up, right? Mm-hmm. Cyborg, Holly Holm, Jermaine Durandamy. Shevchenko, you put somebody in there with her, and you're like, they ain't got no chance of hell. None. They have a shot. They're cooked.
Yeah, it's going to be tough on their next opponent. To me, it's always been the only person that could give her a tough test is now, I don't know, she may never fight again. And that was always Tatiana Suarez.
Yeah.
Like, I think that level of wrestling and combo of skills was always like, oh, that's intriguing. But, yeah, I'm not sure if Tatiana fights. I don't know.
And even then, Shevchenko looks at that fight like food. She's like, oh, you think she could wrestle me? Like, that's how good she is. Tatiana Suarez is no striking. Like, Shevchenko would test the water and be like, oh, let's see how your wrestling is. And then be like, if she's strong, she's like, all right, I'm just going to beat you up now.
Yeah, it's tough.
That girl, she's that good.
I don't know. Then we have the women's strawweight title match goes 1:18. Thug Rose Namajunas catches Weili Zhang with a kick to the jaw. That was set up perfectly because Weili Zhang thinks it's a leg kick. And you actually see her like throw her legs back to get out of the way of the leg kick. And it just comes right up and hits her right in the mouth. And it's over. Weili had no clue where she was at. Only a second loss of her career. Stunned. And Rose's crazy video of her, like right before the fight started, just chanting over and over, I'm the best, I'm the best, I'm the best. Went out there and got the belt. Rose is very likable. She could be very likable. She had the persona where you always wanted to root for her. The comments before the fight really made it hard for me to be like, oh man, I'm glad she won or she deserves this. It just, something is throws me off about Rose, but it's more stuff around her where I still give her a sliver of benefit of the doubt. I just feel like maybe she's very impressionable and sometimes repeats shit that she hears that she doesn't necessarily understand.
Yeah.
And I might be giving her an out. I don't want to give her an out, but that's just what it feels like to me.
Rose Namajunas, when she was on The Ultimate Fighter, if anybody watched that season, you knew she was a little bit different. And like she cut her hair because she didn't want to really be sexualized. And if that was her decision or Pat's decision, I don't know whose decision it was. But that you always knew if you watched that season of The Ultimate Fighter where she was on there, she loses to Carla Esparza in the final. But you knew something was up with her. Like she wasn't always all the way there. There was always something else tugging at her. And you wanted her to win. And Rose is one of those people that I've said on the show a million times. Like, she was a layup in terms of marketability because she had everything going. Like, she was a great fighter. She had the look. She was a very unassuming champion, even when she beat Joanna. She didn't look like you. If you put her in a Maybelline commercial, people are like, she's a fighter? She didn't look like a fighter, but she could fight her ass off. Now, I'm going to go back. This is a few years ago, and Rose is supposed to come backstage to do an interview at a UFC fight. And they called a few of us media members, like, hey, come back here. Rose is going to come talk. Rose comes back. She sits down, and she's looking at the floor. And I think it was me, Mark Rimaldi, and I can't remember who else was there. And I'm like, something ain't right. And she's, like, not really answering questions. And she keeps looking outside the room. Pat Barry's, like, outside the room. And I want to say Trevor Whitman was there as well, but I can't remember. And eventually she just gets up and leaves. Like she just, in the middle of a question, she's like, I can't do it, guys. I'm sorry. And she's like, teary-eyed. And I'm like, it's just something's not right with her. So something's never been right with Rose. Something mental, like we'll talk about Ryan Garcia in a minute. Fighters deal with mental health issues. She clearly has some kind of issues that are not resolved and it affects her. Some fights she's all the way in, some fights she's all the way out. But when she's all the way in, like she was with the Zhang fight, she might be one of the best. I mean, she's number three pound for pound when it comes to women.
Yeah.
Because who else can beat her? She just beat Weili Zhang. She beat Joanna and Jacek. There's nobody else in that division right now. She beat Andrade. She made good on the rematch. And she was piecing up Andrade in the first fight before she got slammed on her head.
I mean, I'd like to see her run it back with Weili. because I think maybe it's a toss-up fight. But outside of that, I'm not sure.
When she's on, who's beating her?
You got to have a very particular set of skills to beat her.
To me, it's almost like you have to catch her on a bad day to beat her. Because when she's on, you're not beating her. Because if you look at the Zhang fight, she was in a zone. And when she's in a zone, she's fluid. And when she's fluid, you don't know what's coming. She beat Andrzejczyk with a left hook. She beat Zhang with a high kick. She killed Michelle Waterson with a high kick as well. And none of them see it coming because Rose knows how to hide her strikes. When she's in her zone, nobody's beating her. Nobody's beating her. But you don't know when she's going to be in that zone. You don't know if she's going to want to deal with the pressure of being champion again. You just don't know. And it's Rose is going to have a very interesting story. And her old comments about Lithuania and Chinese communism, which caused a lot of the Florida fans to boo Whaley, which was utterly ridiculous. I can't believe we still live in a country that chants USA to people that are not white, right? It's so stupid. But the fact that she said that, it did turn me off. And it makes me think, like, well, who's in her ear? Because it didn't feel like something that Rose would say. It felt like something that somebody around her gassed her up with to give her motivation for the fight. Because even after the fight, she was like, I love all people, all this stuff. Because, I mean, for a lot of us, I was like, yo, is Rose black? But she's like Lithuanian. And it's like, all right, she's like the Kardashians. She's a foreign. She has like foreign accents, but they look black. But when she said that about Weili Zhang, I was like, that ain't it, Chief. And I didn't want to run her over, like, you know, on social media or write an article about it, because I just feel like it's not her. It's not her at all. I don't know where it's coming from, but it needs to be fixed. But she's the champ. She's the two-time strawweight champion. You can't take that away from her. But she's going to be one of the more intriguing stories when her career wraps up, when we try to figure out who was Rose Namajunas. I don't think any of us know. I don't even think she knows, and that scares me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it could change by the day. So, like you said, it is. It's scary, but when she's on, she's scary. You mentioned it. Very few can stay with her. Mackenzie Dern's not ready yet, but she might be like fifth in the rankings here soon.
Yeah,
that's interesting, because on the feet, Mackenzie could not stay with her by no stretch of the imagination. But if it touches the floor for any reason, it gets real interesting.
Oh, definitely.
So definitely. I like that if you're looking for names. And then we have the main event, Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. I know I'm jumping to the end of this, kind of, but I'll bring it back to the front. If I hear Colby Covington call him Marty one more time, one more again, why is Colby Covington being interviewed?
You know why.
The man has done nothing to earn a rematch. Whatever. Anyway, going back to the fight. So, packed house, the intensity is rocking. Masvidal said, you know, it was just foot stomps the first time, and it's going to be a wrestling match. Usman has no power, all this stuff. Usman said, okay. We get into this fight. First round, I thought Kamaru had the advantage, you know, dazed Jorge a little bit, but Jorge comes back. Kamaru takes him down. Jorge does a great job with defense on the ground and wrestling, which you could tell, like, Jorge really worked on his wrestling for this. Was able to get up, get his back against the cage, stand up again, create some distance. It gets out of the first round. I think a clear Kamaru round. Then we go to the second. It lasts a minute and 2 seconds because I think even Jorge knew he was in trouble. The telltale sign in combat sports is if someone hits you or almost hits you and you laugh or smile at them, oh, you know something is wrong. And there's the point where Kamaru throws the 1-2. He just throws the blinding jab because he wasn't throwing strong jabs tonight. Like, I think it was the strong jab that we saw in the Gilbert Burns fight that really helped him through the fight. This was just a flash jab to get the attention. And he throws the right hand. He hits Jorge Masvidal in the chest. And Jorge laughs at him and smiles. 13 seconds after Jorge's face down on the canvas. Because at that point, Kamara was like, I got it. I got the range. And Jorge smiled because he was like, fuck, I think he got the range. And then Kamara does the same thing, just a flash jab to just distract him, ends up landing on the left mitt, and he gets the timing perfect. And this time the right hand comes, overhand right, right on the jaw. Jorge Masvidal's head looked like it was going to come off his body and land in the fourth row in Tom Brady's lap. And Tom was going to have to fucking take it like a shotgun snap and throw it back into the octagon. It looked that hard when he got punched and his chin touched his shoulder, and it looks crazy. The images from it are amazing. And it was a one-hitter quitter. There were some follow-up punches that were super necessary, if you ask Kamaru Usman, after Jorge was on the floor. But for all purposes, it was over. And Usman's reign of terror continues. I mean, I don't know who you talk about. I don't know who beats Rose. I don't know who beats this guy.
Yeah, it's so scary. I'm going to read something. God did not bless him with the manhood where he can eliminate another man with his fist. It must be shit to live with. Jorge Masvidal. Yeah. First of all, y'all know my beef with Jorge Masvidal. Me and Masvidal had it out around Martin Luther King Day in January, going back and forth. And it wasn't just really him. I'm pretty sure it was Abe Kawa, his manager. And yeah, fuck him. But then I consider that Usman is the maggot killer. He's crushed Colby Covington, and now he's beat Jorge Masvidal twice. That's fantastic. What I really need to talk about is this fight. When I picked this fight, I picked Usman to win because I said, look, Masvidal's really not that good, if you really think about it. He's never beat a top five welterweight. He beat Ben Askren, who got knocked out by Jake Paul. He beat Darren Till, who's now a middleweight. And he beat Nate Diaz, who's never really beat anybody. Other than that, Masvidal hasn't really beat anybody. He's still a dangerous striker, but he hasn't really beat anybody. So when Masvidal got beat the first time and his excuses were the 6 day, I was like, none of this shit matters. Usman's just a better fighter. He's going to wrestle him, and he's going to defeat him with ground and pound. And I think he'll win a 5-round decision. That shit didn't happen. Usman came out here to prove his point that he is arguably the best fighter in the world. And what he did to Masvidal with the strikes, with the wrestling, look, man, if anybody saw my buy the numbers that I did on Sporting News, Usman has never been outstruck in a single fight. People forget he has not lost since he came into the UFC. He's not lost. He's never been outstruck in a single fight. You know what his takedown defense percentage is? 100. He's never been taken down in a single UFC fight. Never. Never. He's never been outstruck. He's never been taken down. He's never had a split decision. He's never really been in trouble. Colby Covington might have been the most – definitely was the most he was ever
hit. No. Gilbert Burns rocked him. That Colby was trouble.
Colby hit him the most.
Yes, but Gilbert Burns almost turned the lights out.
Yeah, but – even still, Kamara's got a big-ass head. He just takes them shots and he comes back. So you look at Kamaru Usman's career in the UFC, unbeaten, pretty much indestructible. He doesn't really lose rounds. He's never been taken down. Now you go, how fucking good is he? He's number 2 pound for pound in the world, undeniable. There's nobody other than John Jones who's better than him. And even then, he's got – if it wasn't for Jorge Masvidal being essentially a glorified journeyman, he could be number one. John Jones hasn't been very active.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns was not a journeyman, though.
No, not at all. Gilbert Burns was not a journeyman. Tyron Woodley was not a journeyman.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns was 2 months ago, by the way.
Yeah, Colby Covington. Like
2 months.
Colby Covington, as much shit as we give him, he's a good fighter. And he got his jaw broke. The only person that's really left is Leon Edwards. But guess what? Kamaru already beat him too.
Yep.
Early in his UFC run. The only person that's really left that he hasn't beat is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Which stylistically would be quite interesting. But Woodley has shown that if the right hand lands, shit gets problematic.
Right. And again, Usman's never been taken down. you look at the makeup of that division, because the only people that are really left that Usman hasn't touched yet are Wonderboy, Vicente Luque, Michael Chiesa. I don't think any of them can beat Usman.
A very healthy Kamaru.
Yeah.
That's a little bit in the distance, but not that far, to be honest.
I mean, we shall see. You know, and Leon Edwards is still hanging around. He's fighting Nate Diaz, which is kind of weird, but they keep doing this Leon, whatever. But this knockout, people forget Masvidal's never been knocked out. The last time he was submitted is one I'll never forget, which was Toby Yamada in Bellator with an inverted triangle.
Yeah, was it 2009?
Yeah, yes, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Since then, Masvidal's been the king of losing a split decision. He's lost a lot of close fights. He could have a much better record, and he's never been stopped. It's pretty fucking good. He's not great.
He's not bad.
He's not bad. And Usman knocked him out. Knocked him in, like, just obliterated him with that right hand.
Is Usman the top? Is Usman the top welterweight
of all time?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Of all time.
Close. Not yet.
GSP is better.
Yeah, GSP is still better because of the tenure, the reign. Like, you got to do this for a sustained period of time. And that's what GSP did. GSP was dominant for a long time.
Got knocked out, I believe, to lose the title. Came back, won the title. Really close with Big Rig.
Yeah.
Retired after that.
It's the only reason why I say this is because MMA is very weird. Because the media and the fans get really quick to say who's the greatest of all time in the midst of their run. So it's like when Tyron Woodley was having his run, greatest. Robbie Lawler was having his run, it's greatest. You know, you start running down the list, like you start naming names, Jose Aldo, Henan Barao, Cody Garbrandt, Dominick Cruz. In the midst of the run, when you call them the greatest, guess what usually happens? They fucking lose. Fabricio Werdum at one point was the greatest heavyweight of all time. So everybody was like, Fabricio Werdum is the greatest heavyweight of all time. And then Stipe Miocic put his lights out. And Stipe Miocic was the greatest heavyweight of all time. And then look what Ngannou just did to him.
Damn, yeah. Everybody has their day.
Everyone has their day. And GSP lost, came back, and then never really looked back. And then he came back and then moved to middleweight. Granted, it was against Michael Bisping, and then he won another title. But as far as welterweights go, GSP still is the gold standard. Unless Usman continues his dominant run for another couple of years, then we can have a conversation. Beating Jorge Masvidal is not going to put him ahead of GSP for me. Not yet. But right now, I think his run is better than Tyron Woodley's run.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And by the way, Usman was outstruck by Jorge Masvidal.
In this fight?
Yes.
Yeah.
In this
fight. And they knocked him out.
First time ever by a hefty margin, 56 to 32. Most of those significant strikes came when Masvidal was on the ground after Kamaru took him down and was getting hit by elbows. So Kamaru was in top control. Jorge was on the bottom, hitting him with elbows and racked up a ton of significant strikes.
And then got knocked the fuck out.
Well, yeah. I mean, hitting someone from your back isn't necessarily the same thing. So, yeah, interesting fights, you know, this past weekend. We have a card coming up this next weekend. It's really like, all right, whatever. Dominic Reyes is fighting. I'm just trying to make sure he's not washed up. So that's
the Dominic Reyes is losing this week.
You think he's losing?
Oh, yes. I think he is.
Prochaska?
Yes. Have you seen this man striking?
His striking is good. I mean, I really only saw him piece up Ozdemir.
Just, if you get the time, and everybody listening, if you get the time, watch this man striking outside of the UFC.
Okay, outside of the Ozdemir fight.
Yeah, because, I mean, he completely wrecked Ozdemir. But just watch what he does. And then tell me, oh, I feel comfortable with Dominic Reyes. Because remember, Dominic Reyes just got blitzed by Jan Blachowicz. He's probably going to get annihilated again.
He's a little punch drunk. Like this is definitely one of those where it's like, oh, is it a wrap for you? And he pushed John Jones to the edge. People thought he won.
He did. And a lot of people did think he won. I didn't think he won, but a lot of people thought he won. Just makes you wonder about John. So, which brings me to another thing, because we're not gonna, we don't need to predict that card outside of the main
event. No, by no means.
Because
I'm just looking at his fights now. King Mo is the last person to beat Prochaska, knocked him out.
Yeah. Wow. And that was a while ago. And that was when King Mo was really on his game.
Yeah, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Other than that, like this card is like Cub Swanson and Giga Tukadezi and Ian Kutalaba and Dustin Jacoby. It's an all right card. But what I really want to talk about is Dana White, before we go to break, Dana White says, oh, we're doing Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou because John Jones wants $30 million. And then John Jones is like, that's fucking $30 million. What the fuck are you talking about? I don't know who you're talking to. There is a I don't know if and when we'll see John Jones fight again.
We're going to see him fight.
I mean, in the UFC?
They're just going to call his bluff until his number gets somewhere they're comfortable with.
I don't know where that's at. I don't think John asked for $30 million. I don't think so either. And I think Dana trying to make this public is a play, and it's not a good one. Because regardless of what you say, no, John Jones is not a Conor McGregor draw. But a John Jones-Francis Ngannou fight is box office. People want to see that. Pay this man some kind of money. Why are y'all still doing this shit? Posturing in the media ain't it. Because, you know, a lot of us don't really agree with Dana in his positioning on this. Like, yeah, look, man, Derek Lewis has been great. But even Derek Lewis is probably sitting there going, I don't really deserve this fight because Derek Lewis is a very honest guy. And he's probably like, yo, let John Jones fight and I'll fight the winner.
Yep.
This is bizarre, man. Like, I can't foresee John Jones coming to the table like, I've never been paid, I don't think, over $5 million for a fight. I'm talking about discretionary bonuses, all that shit. But now I want $30 million. I don't think that's what John's coming to the table with. 10, maybe. But I think this is a $10 million fight. Look, the UFC makes money hand over fist.
Mm-hmm.
They can afford to pay John and Francis for this fight. Francis don't care. He just got the title. He's chilling. He's like, oh, I'll take $2 million. I'm good. John's like, yo, I've been running this shit for years. I am the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. Pay me. But I don't think that $30 million figure, kind of ridiculous. And yeah, let's be honest.
Sounds crazy.
Who really is sitting there going, I can't wait to see Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis? Ain't nobody doing that. It's a fight we want to see, but that first fight was terrible. We were there for it. I was miserable. John and Francis, I feel like if Dana just pays this man like $10 million to do this fight and John gets knocked out, he's out of your hair. Because it could happen.
Yeah, definitely. But if John wins, your belt is tied up and you're in a pickle.
Hey, I mean, look, man, you pay Conor how much? So
Conor sells a lot of pay-per-views.
He does.
The return on investment's a little different.
I can't take anything away from Conor, except for the dumb shit he said on Twitter where Usman's like aping his style. It's like, man, you can't knock out a lightweight. You think you're going to knock out Usman? Usman would destroy Conor. But at any rate, Conor still sells.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I need Conor to win a fight. But at any rate, John Jones is deserving of getting paid. And he may not be the draw that Conor is, but to fight Ngannou is a big fight. And I don't like Dana shitting on his fighters in public. I think it's a terrible thing to do. That's his brand. That's who he is.
It's going to be interesting. Stuff is getting interesting in the UFC. A lot of stuff is contingent on Conor winning in July. Because if Conor doesn't win in July, we might be talking about Conor versus
Jake Paul and Triller.
So I'm
calling it.
Listen, man, that does 2 million pay-per-view buys. No bet.
Easy.
Oh, okay. Now, damn it. 3 million? No, I'm not going to work myself into a bet.
Don't work yourself into a shoot. Yeah. Hey,
look, I'm just going to let it go.
Jake Paul is living rent-free in everybody's head. The fact that fans were yelling, fuck Jake Paul, and chanting this at a fight, it's like he's not even an MMA fighter.
Daniel Cormier getting in his face.
What
he's calling
doing?
Out DC. He's the big money ticket. He is the new Red Panty Knight.
He really is.
Mama, I made it. Like, that is Jake Paul now.
I don't understand. Like, why?
All the power.
Why do y'all hate Jake Paul? Because Jake Paul, again, he's not, this is not Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul. this is Jake Paul fighting like other people that he should beat. He's not like Floyd Mayweather's robbing the bank. If he really ends up fighting Logan Paul, if it's June 5th or 6th or whatever day they end up with, that's robbing the bank. Jake Paul is actually still fighting people. Why y'all mad at him? Leave the man alone.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Let him make his bread.
Ridiculous. Let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to end this by talking a little bit of boxing before we get out of here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to Bet Online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we're back. It is the home stretch. We're here to talk boxing. Real quick, just a couple of things to mention from last weekend in the boxing world. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but the July 9th fight between Fortuna and Ryan Garcia is no longer. Ryan Garcia decided to withdraw from the fight, saying he just has to get his health in order and take some time away so he can come back as the 100% version of Ryan Garcia we are used to seeing. I commend him for doing that. The comment sections on this online makes me sick. Some people duck in boxing. Some people don't fight the best. This isn't that case.
Nah, man. If that's what he's got to deal with and he's got to take a break, look, more power to him. You know, we sit there and we complain, or a lot of us, you know, or we feed into or we exploit an Adrian Broner, who also has some mental health issues.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, and we make it a sport to shit on Adrian Broner because the man, he needs help and he refuses to get it. But when Ryan Garcia says, look, man, I'm going to take a break, get myself together, and I'm going to fight when I'm ready. We get mad? Come on, man. Stop. Y'all got to relax. There's more than enough boxing. Chill out. Let the man get himself together. He's clearly one of the biggest stars in the sport. He's young. It's okay. It is okay. Just hopefully this is not something that's long-term that's going to affect his entire career. Hopefully this is something short, something he can deal with. Whatever it is, because it's not like he explicitly said it's mental health or
no,
whatever it was. He just said he needed to get himself back in order. So whatever it is, if you got to pull out, let him pull out. Just y'all are wild on social media. Y'all just be talking shit about people like
no damn reason.
For real. It's crazy.
Yeah, wild. So best of, you know, wishes him and getting healthy. If it is mental health, he's been very open about his challenges with anxiety and so forth. So you know what? Take whatever time you need. He's young. Boxing ain't going nowhere. You know, mental health is, you know, people who struggle with mental health, that's a lifelong journey and process. So if he needs time, go take time. The boxing game will be here. He's still going to be a major star. There's no rush. You can come back when you're healthy. He has a baby girl, two kids now, I believe, but just had a baby girl. Like, listen, be healthy. It's about you and your fam. The money will be there. No rush. We had fights, though, this past weekend. Navarrete was on ESPN against Pitufo Diaz, and that was one hell of a show. Starting out with Edgar Berlanga, the streak ends. It ends at 16 first-round knockouts to start his career. This one actually goes the distance in this fight, and I was more impressed with this one than probably all of the 16 first-round knockouts.
Where are you?
I was. He showed that he had to, one, he knocked the guy down five times. So the power's still there, tough opponent, but he could still land his shots. Did he land the overwhelming knockout blow? No. A couple of the times he dropped him, there was like 8 seconds left. So barely saved by the bell in like three of the rounds. including the last and final round, saved by the bell. So those could have been knockouts. But I thought the stamina was there, and I thought he had to show toughness at times because he was getting hit. You're always saying like, oh, I need to see if this guy can take a punch. Well, he took a punch, a lot of punches. The defense could tighten up, but when you take some to give some, he was on the winning end of all of those.
So I have two things. Like, one, when the knockout streak ended, I felt like that's actually good for Belanga because this is unsustainable.
Yeah.
You can't keep this shit up forever. And, you know, if the longer it goes, the more pressure it becomes, and that's the competition steps up, and then you're more likely to make a mistake against an elite opponent in the first round and get clipped and knocked out. So get this out of the way now. Like, I'm not knocking everybody on the first round. I can show you I can go rounds. Thought that was great. I have an issue, though. Belanga gets hit a lot.
Yes, he does.
And Nicholson is not an opponent who has not been knocked out before. He doesn't have great punch resistance. And the fact that he was able to get to Belanga as much as he did is not concerning in the sense where I go, ah, he's not as good as advertised. It's more so to say, slow down. And not his promoter, fans. People are like, yeah, he should fight Canelo. No, he's not even close to that level yet.
No. He's 23 close. And on the pace of a traditional 23-year-old. Like, I understand some 23-year-olds now are Teofimo, they're Devin Haney, which Devin Haney is really getting a step up in competition, if we're being honest. He has the titles, but those are vacated. So we have Shakur Stevens. Yes, we have young fighters, Tank Davis, going up there and grabbing belts and wanting to be really great at a really young age. But that's not the norm. That is a new thing. Like before, you just step up and work your way up. And then at 28, 29, you're really hitting your stride and grabbing belts. People are like, Canelo was fighting Floyd at 23. Why can't he fight Canelo at 23? It's not the same. That's not the norm. That is not the norm.
It's not. So when I see people saying, oh, you know, some people saying, oh, he's not that good. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that he may need to step it up. And for the other people saying like, oh, you know, this is great that he went the distance. I'm also on the line like, Nicholson, not the opponent you should have went 8 rounds with.
I don't know if it would have went 9. How about that? I don't know why it won. I don't know why it was an 8-round fight. Like, he should be fighting 10-rounders. That is something I would give an honest critique. Like, yeah, like, he should be fighting 10-rounders. Like, that's my honest opinion. He's 17 fights in. You're still fighting an 8-round fight. Like, what the hell are we doing? You're a full-fledged pro. Like, fight 10, get ready for 12. I don't care if you never make it out of first round. Like, you should be fighting 10. And I don't know if it would have went 9. I mean, you got dropped 5 times in 8 rounds. You're pretty productive.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, again, Nicholson, an opponent, they touted him as having 20 knockouts in his 23 wins. But his 3 losses, if I remember correctly, are all by knockout.
Yes, and they're all 7 rounds and later?
But what I'm saying is they're against lesser opponents, much lesser. So Berlanger going the distance is good if he needs rounds, of course.
Yeah.
But they have to be careful about – it's good because hopefully they pull back a little bit and say, all right, cool. We can match him up properly and move him. The smart fight to make before the end of the year is probably Gabe Rosado.
Which is a tough one. It is. Because, I mean, we just saw what Gabe arguably just beat Danny Jacobs.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Gabe is always litmus test. He was litmus test for Triple G. He was litmus test for a lot of fighters. So it's a smart fight to make. Is it the next fight to make? No. Berlanga still needs work. It's good to see him getting more rounds in.
Yep.
Nicholson's punch resistance is a little concerning. I mean, Nicholson obviously at a certain point was like, I'm just trying to survive. But he was hitting them. And that makes me wonder, like, you need to tighten up that defense.
Yeah.
But either way, he goes the distance. He wins a unanimous decision. He should be back for June for Puerto Rican Day Parade. Is that the point right now?
I mean, we're internally on hold with that. We don't know what the protocols are in New York. So the aim was to do that at MSG. Coppinger has reported that the fight probably moves to Vegas. So I just know internally we're at a hold. But if it's in Vegas, I don't think he should rush back for June, personally.
I mean, he doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't have to. But why take like a quick, another quicker, maybe even easier fight to fight on a June card if it's not in New York, you know? Yeah. Like the purpose is being New York, Puerto Rican Day weekend, Puerto Rican Day parade. If it's not in New York, let Shakur do his thing as the headliner. And then you go and just sharpen the tools, get back at it. Even if Gabe Rosado isn't next, which he probably could be, but if he's not next, I think, to me, I would hold him out. And this is no inside info or nothing. I would hold him out and try to get him on the undercard of Fury versus Joshua. It looks like Fury versus Joshua is at least moving along in that pace. And if he only has to wait until the end of July, that's 3 months, I would tell him to sharpen the tools. I want to put you on that card. And there's people internally for him to fight in that division.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm kind of relieved that he has to deal with that cloud of first round knockout streak, because it gets ridiculous after a while. So yeah, good for him. And, you know, go back to the drawing board, tighten up that defense, and he'll be fine.
Yep, I agree. And then Andy Ruiz. Oh, I guess Navarrete in the main event. Can't just skip the main event. Beat Pitufo Diaz, Christopher Pitufo Diaz. And, I mean, Navarrete looks good at 126. And the question now is, people are like, oh, should he move up to 130? Like, he just got there, by the way. It's like his second fight at 126 from moving up from 122. There's a lot of good fighters at 126. I just don't know if there's any ones that are willing to fight him.
Yeah, he's crafty with his pressure. I mean, he looked good in this fight, 12 rounds, gets a late stoppage. Look, just chill out. Again, moving up in weight, man, he just got here. Let the man live, man. And, you know, if somebody's going to fight him, you know, people are like, hey, Gary Russell. And I was like, yeah, all right, Groundhog Day. We'll see when that man fights again. But
yeah, everything's across the street, one of the streets. Yeah. And he's a tough guy to talk one of the other promotions into putting your champion in the ring with.
Not exactly. It's not a fight that, you know, other promoters say, well, that's a winnable fight. No, it's a hell fight. And it's not a fight that you necessarily want. So Navarrete is a great fighter. We'll see how good he gets to be, but this was an impressive performance. It just showed, like, he's tough, man. He's tough. He throws a lot of punches. He's busy. He's crafty. He's got a good chin. He's got all the tools. I don't know who wants to fight him. I don't think most people do.
It's going to be a little rough finding an opponent for him. And then two fights coming up this next weekend. The first one on DAZN during the day, we have Katie Taylor versus Natasha Jonas, which is going to be a good fight. Love when Katie Taylor fights. I'm taking Katie. Hopefully, this is finally the one that we get Amanda Serrano-Katie Taylor fight.
Hopefully. I would hope so. We'll
next, see. Fingers crossed, maybe.
Hey,
hopefully.
Who knows? Natasha Jonas is a pretty good fighter, but Katie Taylor is the class of that division.
Yeah, Katie Taylor does get hit a lot, though, so that should be entertaining. Chris Eubanks Jr. on this card. That should be fun. Another, talking about a guy with promising potential. Like, I like Chris Eubanks Jr. Then we have Dmitry Bivol defending his WBA light heavyweight title. This is significant because it is, you know, a title defense against a mandatory. And hopefully we're creeping towards a fight between him and Better BF.
Yeah. That's what we all want.
Yes, is the fight we all want. So that hopefully will get done around November, December, because now it looks like Better BF is going after another title Joe Smith Jr. just picked up. Yeah. Easy to make in top rank. But Bivol, I just want to see him stay impressive, get the knockout, let's keep it rolling. And then we have Derek Chisora versus Joseph Parker, 12-round fight. Listen, man, Chisora kind of looked good the last fight, even though he lost.
I mean, against Usyk. I mean, I picked Joseph Parker to win a decision. Yeah. Chisora's always going to come to fight. He's kind of like the Gabe Rosado of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, he is.
He's going to come to fight. If you're a better boxer, you can beat him. But if you fall asleep at the wheel, he's going to stop you. Joseph Parker should be on this game. He needs this win pretty bad. Chisora is always going to be around for heavyweights to fight. So I'm picking Joseph Parker.
I'm going to take Joseph Parker too. But yeah, it'll be interesting. It's not going to be a runaway fight. Like you said, Derek Chisora is always here to bring it, and he's always a tough test. And then we have at night, Andy Ruiz, Fox pay-per-view.
This is ridiculous.
From Carson. California, StubHub. I don't know what it's called now. So
Digital Health Center.
Digital Health Center, congrats. That's the opposite of what SlugHub was back in the day. There was nothing healthy about fighting in there. Someone's getting their block knocked off. So in this one, heavy Mexican card, which is great. It's the week before Cinco de Mayo. And to be honest, I'm not sure if I'm buying the fight. I work in the profession. I'm sure I'll get the fight. But the card's not that bad. Adrian Granados, I really like watching him fight. You have Omar Figueroa Jr. versus Abel Ramos. Not a bad fight right there. Arislandi Lara on this for the vacant WBA regular middleweight title, which is crazy. Like, Lara's moving up. And this is new look Lara, where he just wants to get in slugfest.
Well, he can't move like he used to, so he has to fight.
Yeah, so I like that. Fundora is on this. All right, good little co-main. And then, of course, the main event, Andy Ruiz versus Chris Arreola. New look Andy. Slim and trim Andy compared to the old Andy. I think he's going to knock Arreola out in two rounds. I have so much faith in Team Canelo that I think we're going to see the best version of Andy Ruiz we've ever seen. Like Reynoso and Chepo, like, they're just so good. And he's dedicated. I think he's going to put on a show.
I hope so. Like I told y'all last week, if you're buying this pay-per-view, you're buying this pay-per-view to see Andy Ruiz with his shirt off. Because there's really no other reason to pay all this money for a car that should be on, like, Showtime. Nevertheless, Ruiz is going to stop Arreola. He looks in great shape. He's around 250 now instead of being 280. Listen, I was in Saudi Arabia for the Anthony Joshua-Andy Ruiz fight. And Andy Ruiz just ate all week.
He didn't take his shirt off at weigh-ins like a young me about to go to the pool.
Dog.
I used to be in the pool full shirt on. It's a damn shame.
He was not. Like, he let that wind get to his head, and he thought he could just knock him out. But he was big as hell. So see him smaller is what you're paying for. It's like, hey, let's see Andy Ruiz's shirt off. $59, whatever the fuck the pay-per-view price is. That's crazy. He's gonna stop Arreola. I don't know if it'll be in the second round. Ruiz is a little bit slower worker. Arreola is gonna come to fight, but I think it'll be a fun fight. It just ain't worth my pay-per-view money. And yes, Omar Figueroa is on the card, Granados is on the card. This is a good card. Fortunately, I work in a business where I don't pay for pay-per-views anymore, so I'm going to enjoy this card. But I can't tell anybody with a bunch of money – well, not even a bunch – with money in their pocket, like, you should absolutely buy this. I'm not telling anybody that. This is not a must-buy pay-per-view. It's a good card, though.
You buy this if you say, on the 8th, I should be paying for a Canelo pay-per-view anyway. So, you know what? I'll just throw my money at this.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only way to see it, because otherwise, like, I can't make sense out of this being a pay-per-view. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no. Nah. So it'll be interesting. We're both picking Andrew Ruiz to win by knockout. So tons of stuff to recap next week. That's our show for today, though. So we want to thank all of you guys for listening. Another good combat sports show. We have pro wrestling coming up later in the week. Got to talk about this Impact main event. Kenny Omega, the belt collector. It's going to be a good wrestling show later in the week. Until then, though, this has been a long one. We'll keep the outro short. Make sure you guys stay safe. Stay Rona-free. Yes, it's still a thing, even though we just saw 15,000 people at a UFC event with no mask on. So please stay healthy. Keep listening to us every week. Check out our other show, Wrestling with Stereotypes, on adfreeshows.com. We got Mega Ran on the new episode. Very fun show this week. And you can follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_ on Twitter, @CornerClubForLife on Instagram. Make sure you follow me at Kel Dansby, him and Andreas Hale on all platforms. Until next time, though, we're out.
Peace.